Welcome to the Juliana Forlano Show. I'm Juliana Forlano. On today's show, I am joined by two of my colleagues who are involved in the Feel the Burn activities that happened last night supporting the candidacy of Bernie Sanders. Then we're going to be calling our own elected representatives live here on the show to make our voices heard about the Iran peace talks. Finally, at the end of the show, we are joined by Seth Shostak, the American astronomer and the director of the Center for SETI Research. SETI, of course, being the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. We're going to talk to him about finding Earth's cousin in a faraway galaxy. All that and more coming up on the Juliana Forlano Show. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Juliana Forlano Show. I'm Juliana Forlano. We have to start our show like we start every show, with jokes.
And now it's time for Headlines and Punchlines.
You gotta tell them Silent Green is people!
Headlines and Punchlines with Juliana Forlano.
That is a very serious intro to the headlines and punchlines for the week. Okay, let's get to it. Scientists found a planet they're calling Earth's twin, although it's not identical since it still has an ozone layer. It also doesn't have any people on it, which means that Earth must be the evil twin. Upon hearing that these two are twins, Hugh Hefner said he wants to arrange a date.
Ew, gross.
A Russian billionaire is donating $100 million to fund the search for intelligent alien life. Meanwhile, the Koch brothers are donating even more to fund all this unintelligent life we have right here at home.
And he would take the Israelis and basically march them to the door of the oven.
Oh, my God. Bernie Sanders reached out to the country Wednesday night, broadcasting via webcam at 7:30 p.m. or as most people his age normally call it, bedtime. Sanders is the oldest candidate running. How old is he? Well, he's up in I don't give a f***, I'll be honest and say whatever I think category, which would be refreshing in a presidential candidate. Sanders has dominated social media with the hashtag #FeelTheBurn, which is also what happens when Sarah Palin tries to think.
Ow, it hurts.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump said if elected, he'd love to have Palin in his cabinet, although Palin isn't sure how she'd fit inside. Trump is taking a lot of harsh criticism as of late. His kids have recently publicly defended him, proving true the old adage that where there's a will, there's a way. Meanwhile, Ivana Trump said that she felt violated during sex with the Donald, adding that, hey, that thing in his pants, not exactly what she'd call a Trump tower. President Obama appeared on The Daily Show last week, and he said, quote, we move the ball forward, which disqualifies him from ever coaching the New York Jets. They don't do that. Stewart has 1 week left on The Daily Show. Once he's gone, liberals will be looking to a new host to get their news, while conservatives will still be looking for Obama's birth certificate. President Obama said in an interview that if he ran again, he would win, while Chris Christie says that if he ever runs, you might want to call a medic. Christie's popularity in the polls is way down at the bottom, right next to his sense of decency. At a campaign stop, Hillary Clinton refused to state whether she was for the XL pipeline or not, saying she'd answer the question when she's president. So I guess we'll never know. A new report shows computers belonging to members of parliament searched for porn over 247,000 times last year. It seems these English gentlemen are suffering from more than just a stiff upper lip. North Korea says it has no interest in taking part in an Iran-style nuclear deal. However, they may go for one. That's Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Ah, you gotta love the jokes. A refreshing way to almost end the week. So this past Wednesday night at around 7 o'clock, Bernie Sanders gave a televised address to his supporters who were meeting in all these different places all across the United States, including several meetings here in New York City. I, Juliana Forlano, happened to be at the Manhattan People for Bernie gathering. Our head comedy writer on the show, Anthony Mostacho, who's joining us today, happened to be at one on Staten Island. And our chief engineer for the show, Charles Carr, also conveniently joining us today, every day, but as a silent partner. But today he's going to talk as the organizer for one of the events in Brooklyn. I thought we would bring that information to you on our recurring segment that you know that we like to call
Feel the Burn.
When you give tax breaks to billionaires and refuse to raise the minimum wage, that's extremism.
Feel the Burn.
When you deny the right of workers to come together in collective bargaining, that's extremism.
Feel the Burn.
When you tell a woman that she cannot control her own body, that's extremism.
Oh, yeah, that is excellent. So Anthony Mostaccio and Charles Carr joining us in the studio today.
Hey, I love that intro. That was awesome.
We made that. That was the voice of Charles Carr.
Which I finally get to comment on. I love it every time I hear it. It's beautiful.
I love it, too. It's actually making me want to do more segments on Bernie Sanders because just because of that. So you guys are both, what, you're 25, right, Charles?
Yeah, 25.
And Anthony, how old are you?
22.
Oh, my God, you're a baby. That's good, though. So
I had to card people last night, and there was someone born in 96 there, and it just didn't look right. I had to put an X on their hand. It's like, you can't buy any beer.
So you had to be above us. Oh, you could be any age, or you had to be above us.
It was an all-ages event that was ID checked.
So tell me about your individual events. We'll start with you, Charles.
Brooklyn for Bernie Sanders and the People for Bernie Sanders combined, and we had it at a German beer hall. Like 2 blocks away from Atlantic Pacific Terminal. 211 people.
What did the crowd look like? Was it? And wait, what about yours, Anthony? Where was yours?
Ours was on Staten Island at the ATU Union Hall in Tottenville. And we had it in the basement, which isn't as exciting as it sounds. And
what? A lot of weird things happen in basements. That's
Union basements.
Voting and stuff.
We had about a crowd of about 40, 45 people.
Were there more than one meetup on Staten Island for Bernie Sanders?
No, that was the only one.
Yeah, because Staten Island is a pretty red, it's a blood red part of, if you're red, you got to move to Staten Island.
We voted in a criminal twice just because he had an R next to his name, but now he's going to jail, so I guess there's a happy ending.
So you've got a happy ending for that. So talk about, Charles, the people in, and I was at the one in Manhattan. It was near Union Square at a bar with lots of TVs that were playing sporting events before they all switched and played the Bernie Sanders event. And we had about, I think the head count was about 300 folks were there, maybe more. I'm not sure. I got the head count sort of 2/3 of the way in. And so the crowd where I was mostly people 30 and under. And then I would say 2/3 people 30 and under, the rest people maybe 50 and above. So that middle ground area wasn't covered so much, between 30 and 50. And most of the attendants were, you know, white of some sort or other. But there was African Americans for Bernie Sanders in attendance as part of the different groups who were there. Women for Bernie Sanders, labor for Bernie Sanders, teacher for Bernie Sanders, et cetera. What about you guys? What did it look like at your...
The first part of what you said is pretty accurate for my event as well. It's definitely people under 30 and then people over 50 was the kind of vibe I was getting.
Rest of us have jobs. No, I'm just kidding.
It happened at 7:30. Everyone should have been out by that point. But
the kid raising the part. They're at home with
their kids. The kids could have come. You could have brought the kids. We'll give them stickers. We got Bernie stickers.
Feel the Burn.
We got the handouts.
And what about people of color?
Definitely not a majority of the group.
But there was some.
Yeah, there was a representation.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Anthony, what about on Staten Island?
Well, our Bernie Sanders thing was held by our workers' advocacy group, the Middle Class Action Project. So a lot of the people there were mostly young, like in their 20s. But we also had a lot of middle-aged people. So that's...
They were all at, that's because they middle-aged people live in Staten Island.
Yeah,
it must be a demographic thing.
The next stop on the way to Florida for the rest of your life. So,
what was the response to? So Bernie Sanders gave a speech, and at the event where I was participating, people went around and spoke about why they were supporting Bernie Sanders, and they gave a list of things from veterans treating veterans better and well to single-payer health care to the kinds of things that Bernie was talking about. What was the response from the crowd after the video was shown?
There was a lot of clapping throughout the video, and before the
yeah,
video
I wish
actually,
he had taken. I was like, oh, someone should make him take applause breaks because people would be clapping, and then he'd have been on to his next point of whatever he's going to do.
But we actually did like a beforehand before the video started. We started a chant of like, "Why are you here? Why are you supporting Bernie Sanders?" Only a handful, like four or five people, stood up and said anything. You know, ranging from, you know, he wants to fight climate change and he doesn't deny it, to he's fighting for tax breaks for millionaires. So people are really getting the point, which is awesome.
Mm. And what about at Brooklyn?
We made sure that the hosts and sponsors, the people who helped organize the event, spoke just to give an idea and a connection for the audience to say, like, if I talk to that person, I know they can bring me closer to the campaign in this way and that way. And then we invited, and it was about three people came up afterwards. One of them was a former Marine, and then two people who didn't identify as anything special. But they were, one of them was making a very good point that somehow we had missed, which is none of this means anything if we do not get the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is all about the primary at this point, getting people registered as Democrat, because if you're not registered as Democrat, you can't vote for Bernie.
In the primary, so that he can beat Hillary, so that then he can be the candidate for.
He can be the Democratic candidate as long as he gets through the primary.
Do you know how far in advance, how much time do people have to register as Democrats? And then you could register and then
I believe October 9th was the date I kept hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were you know, a big stack of voter registration forms.
Oh, yeah,
there.
We had plenty. We registered at least three people last night. But we also have leftover registration forms to make sure we can go out. Everyone who was there could probably claim they voted for Obama twice. It was that kind of crowd, you know?
Vote early, vote often. What about over in SI?
See, I feel like a bit of a hypocrite because I'm totally registered as an independent. So I've
So what are you going to do?
I've totally got to get on registering as a Democrat.
All right, let's do that. Hold on. Let me pull up the library website. How did you become the Blue Island? You personally become one of the five Blue Islanders in a sea of red on Staten Island?
Having a brain and a lot of common sense in Staten Island is hard to come by, so I'm lucky to be privileged to be one of them. So
I have to say, anytime we have Staten Island jokes, they always come from you.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Reading and opening my mind. And
What were you reading?
Just reading. Well,
don't give me the Sarah Palin answer. Like,
everything they put in front of me. They put a lot in front of me. Reading the news and reading more about the candidates. And I supported Obama when he ran 2008. I wasn't old enough to vote yet, but the more I read on his policy and the more I heard from my father and people around me, I was kind of influenced a bit. Like, my mother's a Republican, so I kind of ignore that. But the more I
is she a Republican based on religious issues? Wedge issues and whatnot?
I'm not even sure. She kind of like repeats the jargon like without thinking.
So she's listening to right-wing radio or regular corporate radio.
See, she's the kind of, she scrolls down the newsfeed on Facebook and sees the memes and just reads them out and just takes it. That's her talking, and she just reads off talking points. And if you try to like argue with her, she just says the talking points back to you over and over until she tangents into something else.
And then you're like, just give me the lasagna.
Yeah, pretty much.
She's Italian?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And your dad's Italian?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Fascinating. And what about you? But you were also in a labor union.
Mm-hmm. I was with UFCW.
So I would think that would... Mm-hmm. How many people your age were in the labor union, just out of curiosity?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah,
but we're all young workers.
Yeah, yeah, and you were working at an unnamed grocery mart store,
mm-hmm.
Not a mart really,
a market, if you will.
A market.
I was working there for 5 years, and I became interested the same way I became interested in politics through my front end manager, who helped co-found the Middle Class Action Project. I also became interested in labor rights and workers' rights and unions. Mm. And then I ended up becoming a union activist last summer out in San Francisco, helping to fight to raise the minimum wage to 15, which ultimately happened. So hip, hip, hooray.
So the that is hip, hip, hooray. Hold on. This is very important. Those are children who will probably benefit from.
They will be paid.
When they get that $15 an hour minimum wage. That's really interesting. And Charles, how did you become... I like to think that you were a libertarian before you started working on this show.
I was not a libertarian. I was not. That is slander.
I'm sorry.
I heard Bernie announce his candidacy. I signed up on his website, and I get an email one day saying, we're going to have these July 29th events. And I showed it to my friend, and he was like, we got to do something big.
Your friend is a Young Democrats.
Yes. New Kings Democrat, Brooklyn Young Democrats. His name is John Wasserman. And so him and I have just barreled into this. And we started with one venue, and then the expected total amount of people was like, it grew so big. We were like, we got to find a new place. And then we paired up with the People for Bernie. They sent us people to work with and throw ideas around and plan this out. And it became this, you know, yeah.
Where'd you grow up, Charles?
Brighton Beach.
Brighton Beach. And what's the neighborhood like there?
But I live in the part of Brighton Beach that's mostly Middle Eastern Pakistani.
Okay.
I live across the street from the biggest mosque in the area. And
you're Jewish?
I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
There is a
synagogue. So you're living together in peace there, just pointing out that that's a possibility.
I don't put the menorah out, but it's...
Really?
No.
Okay.
But that's just because I'm not really that practicing.
Oh, it's not because you're afraid that there would be some... Interesting.
It's beautiful, though. Sometimes you'll wake up in the morning and it'll be this beautiful prayer going on. They can't, what their equivalent of a cantor, I guess.
That's very interesting. Yeah. One of the reasons I wanted you both as members of the show and also as people who we all just happened to be going the same event, but on three different boroughs.
It was pretty funny. I was like, Juliana, you want to do this? Oh, no, I'm doing this. Oh, my God.
Yeah. You were like, why don't you come to the Brooklyn one and talk? And I said, well, I'm going to the Manhattan one to talk. Sorry.
And these were the big ones, yeah. Too. These were, I mean, your event had about 300. My event had about 200. And then everybody else was like 70, 50, 25.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those were because of, you know, you can't get 50 people in a spot at somebody's house or you can't. It's hard to get a big space to run one of these events in New York.
We only have 40 Democrats on Staten Island total.
And they all came.
So everyone was accounted for.
I am so sorry for you.
Thank you.
Staten Island.
Hey, anything else you guys want to say to the listeners in terms of what happened last night and the feel on the ground?
Well, in the spirit of the event, I'd like to share the phone number that you can text the message to.
Absolutely.
So,
tell the people what were the radio people. So you can text a message.
You can text this number, and then you will get a link to Bernie Sanders' website, and it will be a sign-up page for how you can get involved in the campaign if you'd like to. It's a volunteer action, and there's a ton of things you can do. Anything from just like, would you like to work just 2 hours a week? Would you like to man a phone bank? Would you like to volunteer in a parade? Would you like to knock on doors?
Well, I'll do the parade.
Everything.
That sounds
fun. So it's 82623. 82623. And you text TEAM, TEAM. 82623.
I have a feeling you can text anything because they said you could text Bernie or you could text work or you could text team. Text anything. We love you. You know, but team is
the one that
worked for me also. Maybe they have them split up over the groups or whatever, but the number again that you just text to is
82623.
You know, and the other thing I noticed at the event is that everywhere you looked around, there was a feeling that you don't get very often in New York, and I feel that maybe you don't get very often anywhere, is that in this room of 300 people, we all have sort of a common desire for the betterment of humanity, and we're awake to what's happening. And it's very, very heartening, and it's very, 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 I don't know, just wakes you up, makes you feel a feeling of solidarity that's, you know, the mainstream media goes so far to make us feel separated from ourselves and from each other that being at these events has that opposite effect. And I just thought that was great. I mean, literally people were just randomly talking to each other as if we were all at one big family gathering or at a wedding or something like that.
Like our thing was sponsored by this very specific group of people we don't even know showed up and they were like, hi, I've never heard of this, but I hear we're watching Bernie, so I'm into it. And that was outstanding.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that kind of reach. It's nice to have that kind of people coming together. It's kind of like when people get together to watch the Super Bowl, but this is for like something that actually really matters.
Yeah. It's the Super Bowl, but with like actual heart. Like when you're jumping up and down off a couch, it's about the betterment of humanity.
15 minimum wage, past the wings.
I also, one point I always make is that it doesn't really take everyone to be involved. It only takes certain people. It's always been like this. There's always been a large percentage of people who are outside the political process. But we're inside of it. And I think our listeners are inside of it, too. So give that number again.
82623.
And where else can, and you text team to that number, and you'll get on the list. And where else can you go if you're not a texter? Because some of our listeners might not
you can
be
go
twinkle thumbs.
Their website, BernieSanders.com/work. And the text message will lead you there as well. BernieSanders.com/work. And it's going to give you that sign-up sheet and all these check boxes, all these things you could do. You could even become an organizer and host a house party.
Ooh. But first, go change your registration so that you can, if you feel moved by what Bernie Sanders is saying and doing, change your registration so you can vote for him in the primary. Or if you feel not moved by what Hillary Clinton is saying and doing, you should change your registration. And I don't know. Because it's the Giuliana Forlano show and it has my name on it, I feel that I am allowed to give my opinion. And I've been really moved by what Bernie Sanders is trying to do. He's really making history here, and I'm glad we can be part of it.
Yeah.
Last night, after they gave out the number, everyone in the room texted and everyone was signing up. And I know our group is going to have another meeting of all those people next month, and we're going to talk about what we can do on Staten Island specifically.
I want to come to Staten Island to help over there. You think
sure.
That would help?
Yeah, sure. Please do it.
Why don't we just tell everyone he's a Republican? That would be the best.
Bernie Sanders supported Michael Graham, and we get all the votes.
Well, Bernie Sanders is an independent, and I think the idea is he's running on his own ideas, even though he's running as a Democrat. And it's possible that he could, if he wins the primary and becomes a candidate for the Democrats, he could get voters from the right to actually listen to his platform and vote for it, as opposed to. Because the right has zero moderate candidates other than
Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush. But Jeb Bush's name is Jeb Bush. And Jeb Bush's family
Everyone
is the Bush family.
It is the dynasty. But he's a total moderate. And it's incredible that he's like the sane brother.
Well, the sad part is that, you know, as a moderate, he still takes positions that I think would undermine the general fabric of this country.
He's a Republican.
Naturally.
Right.
He's a Republican.
I like being in a room where everyone agrees with me. Well, I'm going on Fox News again next in a couple of weeks, so that'll be exciting to be in a room where no one agrees with me.
It's fun to see Republicans all hate Jeb Bush the same way it's fun to see all Democrats hate Hillary Clinton for the exact same reason, because they're too much like the other party.
Mm. But at least we have a candidate who's not. And I've heard that potentially Joe Biden might be getting into the race, which would...
Bolton Joe.
Would make it interesting.
Love Bolton Joe.
I'm a fan of Joe's, what he's done for women, and I generally like Joe's personality. But I'd really... I mean, I just like that guy somehow.
He's a funny
And he's
guy.
Been touched by tragedy, so he has a certain compassion to him that I don't see in certain, people who want to cut working people's... Scott Walker, for example, they want to, cut people's right to organize. What they want to cut down on is what we did last night, have a feeling of solidarity with each other, because that is powerful. And we did that. You're listening to the Giuliana Forlano Show. I've been talking to my head comedy writer, Anthony Mostaccio, and our chief engineer, Charles Carr, the best guest I could have asked for today.
Right on. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us.
All right. We'll be right back with more stuff.
I am black.
I am gay.
And I am Latino.
We're the new Republicans.
Hey, my black friend. You are African American all the time. Tell the people why you are Republican, why don't you?
Glad to, my same-sex friend. I am a smaller government guy, who is also a black guy.
And I am a part of a growing group of Spanish-type people.
We're the new Republicans.
As a Latino man, I'm not going to deport myself.
I no longer wish to deport you, only to discriminate against you in more socially acceptable ways.
As do I, my fellow minorities. I am gay, but I feel gay marriage should be between a man and a woman.
We're the new Republicans!
I think evolution might be true.
I think facts might be true.
Global warming is still not true.
We're the new Republicans!
As a black man, I no longer believe in not helping black people.
I am gay. I am here. Get used to it.
I speako Spanish.
Now America has a real choice.
It's like the choice between Oreos and Hydrox.
Vegas and Atlantic City.
Type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes.
We're the new Republicans!
And that public service announcement came from the genius comedians and our good friends over at the show known as The Final Edition. I want to thank everybody who is using our Amazon link when they're shopping on Amazon. If you don't know about it already, if you go to our website, julianaforlano.com, there's a big picture of me and it says shop here on Amazon. And if you use that link to get to Amazon, we get a little bit of kickback, a little bit of percentage of the money that you spend on Amazon. Doesn't raise your Amazon prices, doesn't change anything about your Prime or your cart or whatever. And we're not even saying go shop at Amazon, but if you are already doing that, it is a good way to support your favorite causes by using the links from those causes. And we do thank everyone who's already doing that. You can find that link on our website at julianaforlano.com. You can also find links to our iTunes podcast, where if you listen there, we really ask that you leave a comment on how you feel about the show. It really helps us out in a number of ways. So everyone who's already doing that, I just want to thank you, and we'll move on. You're listening to The Juliana Forlano Show. I'm Juliana Forlano in the studio. Anthony Mostaccio joining me. Also, Charles Carr, engineer on the boards. So did you guys see this video? Jack Black, Morgan Freeman, all these folks, Queen Noor of Jordan, Valerie Plame, joined together with the former ambassador to Israel, Thomas Pickering, to suggest that the result of the Iran deal falling through would have very, very dangerous consequences. It's a really cool video. I'm going to play it for you.
I love playing frisbee with my sons.
I love the sound of the waves on the Pacific at sunrise.
I love curling up with a good book.
I love to see my grandkids smile.
But if Congress sabotages the nuclear deal with Iran,
we could be denied the very moments that make our lives worth living.
Why?
Dude. Because we'd be dead.
Super dead.
Like totally fried by a major nuclear bomb dead.
I won't be able to play frisbee with my sons because there won't even be a frisbee. The frisbee will be melted.
We will be melted.
Or worse. Toasted?
Yes, Natasha, but most people think toast is delicious. This would not be that kind of toast. It would be like a really dark, unpleasant cloud of death toast.
Whoa! We're not actually worried about Iran dropping a nuclear weapon on the United States.
Holy sh**. Is that...
Yes, Jack, it's me, Queen Noor from Jordan.
Look, it is true that if Congress sabotages this deal, there would be nothing stopping Iran from getting the bomb. That would likely spark an arms race throughout the region.
Precisely, Ambassador Pickering.
Ultimately, we could be forced into a war with Iran, another dangerous, drawn-out, and expensive conflict in the Middle East with many lives lost.
So wait, are you saying that instead of a quick toasting type of death, that in a war with Iran, maybe a lot of people would die much more slowly? Like if they were put into, say, an immense crock pot for a really, really long time?
Natasha, I don't think you need a surrealistic food metaphor to comprehend the sheer recklessness of a war with Iran. Once a war begins, the chances of Iran developing a nuclear weapon would only increase.
Wait a second. That's Valerie Plame. Valerie Plame is in this flipping video. Valerie, do you know that because you're a spy?
I'm not going to answer that question, Jack.
I think what Valerie is saying is that the agreement currently on the table is the best way to ensure Iran doesn't build a bomb.
And it gives the international community unprecedented access to verify that Iran is keeping up its end of the bargain.
A strong deal built on international diplomacy is the best way forward.
And the alternative to that is war.
War with Iran is a really bad idea.
The worst idea ever.
Look, we all love our children, and the Iranians love their children.
And we've got a deal on the table that keeps us all safe.
Do me a favor, okay? Don't let some hot-headed member of Congress screw that up.
Because playing politics with our national security is actually not all that funny.
Call Congress, tell them, support diplomacy. It's the only sane solution.
Like, my question is, who dropped out so Jack Black would be in? I want to know who...
He was really good. He, like, carried it.
I love it. He was tossing a frisbee, but...
He was a real activist. I didn't realize that.
At no point would I ever guess... If I had to pick like 100 celebrities, at no point would I ever pick Jack Black as like someone who'd be up there talking about Iran.
I'm thrilled that he is because he has such an, you know, a lot of people ignore these foreign policy issues. They think it's too complicated to understand. And Jack Black has the kind of audience that it would be good if those people started paying attention. But Morgan Freeman was on it. God. God was on it. And you know who? Here's the other thing. So I live in Brooklyn, as we know, and the August congressional recesses is coming up. That during those recesses, that is when many senators finalize their decision on how they're going to vote on this Iran deal. Even though, according to a recent poll, a majority of Americans and a majority of members of both parties support the Iran nuclear deal, there is really a fight for diplomacy and peace that it has not been won. And both of my senators, Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, are hesitant to support the deal. Senator Schumer might be leaning toward voting no, actually. So according to the Washington Post, he might be leaning toward voting no. This is Senator Chuck Schumer. Me and Chuck vote at the same voting booth. I've seen Chuck in his pajamas because he votes in his sweatpants, which I have to say, I think they're like his old, I don't know, maybe prep school or high school sweatpants. Get some new sweatpants, Chuck. You're looking a little shungad when you go
home. So you have like a very personal relationship with him, I see.
He was pissed at me because I was like, I didn't know you voted here. He said, I've been living here for the last 20 some odd years. I'm like, but I...
Not a morning person.
Sorry, Chuck. Jeez. I just said about the voting. I didn't say, hey, I don't like your pro-hawkishness, pro-Wall Street stance. Then he could be a little snippy with me. But anyway, I think we're going to call. We're going to call Chuck and because I think he needs to hear from me from the Giuliana Forlano show. So we're going to call him and you can call him, too, if you want to let him know that you're well, you can let him know whatever you think. But I believe the pro-Iran deal is the kind of thing that will keep peace. A lot of people who make a lot of money off of war do not want it. So let's keep that in mind when we're thinking about keeping peace and how expensive it is to keep peace by not creating and dropping arms on folks halfway across the world. So let's give a call to Chuck Schumer and tell him our opinion. Chuck Schumer, 202. Charles, you can get him on the horn. 202-224-6542 if you guys want to call later. But we're going to call now. 202-224-6542. Okay, this is what I'm going to say. I'm ready. It's the last time I called my congressman a couple weeks ago, but it wasn't. I don't know if it was Chuck.
Hello. This is Senator Chuck Schumer, and you've reached my Washington office.
Whoa.
I'm sorry that no one's available to take your call right now.
Robocall.
A member of my staff should be with you shortly. We appreciate your patience, and thank you for calling.
Thank you, Chuck, for... Oh!
Such lovely music.
I can't believe Chuck recorded his own outgoing message. That's very personal of him.
Sweatpants, record personal messages. I like him. He's very personable.
It's very personable. Except he yelled at me that one time, Park Slope.
He's not a morning person.
I'm going to say that I urge Senator Chuck Schumer to publicly support the Iran nuclear deal, which will prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon and prevent another war of choice that the Republicans would be happy to drag us over.
Senator Chuck Schumer again.
Chuck?
Thanks for continuing to hold.
You're welcome.
Your call's important
two messages.
To me.
I don't,
a member of my staff
I don't
will
think
be with
my
you
call
shortly.
Is important
again,
to you, Chuck.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
I like this music being reflective of someone who might vote yes for a war. That's...
Yeah.
I like that.
They need to put in some sound effect bombs there. And we wait. Well, this could be good news. It could mean that a lot of people are calling Senator Chuck Schumer right now to let him know how we feel about this Iran deal. The number, if you want to call, which I encourage you to do, I think you got to call between 9 and 5 p.m., yeah, like business hours. 202-224-6542 is the number.
The music changed. Nope,
and
back
we're back.
To. Spoke too soon. Maybe his interns are like out to lunch or something.
Is it lunch hour?
I'm not sure. What time is it? It's like 2:30 almost.
Hi, this is Senator Chuck Schumer. I'm too busy cozying up to Wall Street to take your call right now, but your call is important to me. Not really, but kind of. Please stay on the line for an exorbitant amount of time.
I'm waiting for like a third message of, I'm sorry you're still waiting. This is Chuck Schumer again.
My staff is completely underpaid.
My staff is understaffed, actually.
My understaffed.
My understaff is underpaid.
If you like this music and you like peace, call Chuck Schumer now and tell him that you'd want him to support the peace deal that President Obama has negotiated. 202-224-6542. And then you feel like you did something today.
This should be the new theme song for, like, the show.
For the Giuliana Furlano show?
I like it. It's very, like...
Oh, here we go.
Good afternoon, Senator Schumer's office. How may I help you?
Hi. My name is Giuliana Furlano, and I'm calling to urge Senator Schumer to support the Iran nuclear deal.
Okay. Well, I would be more than happy to pass that on. Do you mind if I just take your zip code?
You should totally take my zip code. 11215. I'm his neighbor.
Oh, okay. Great.
Is he
leaning?
Well,
thank you for calling in. Yeah.
Is he? Everything I've heard reported is that he hasn't picked one way or the other. But,
right, that's correct. He's still he's spending a lot of time looking over the details of the deal and meeting with experts. Just really, honestly, working really hard to make a decision. But he has yet to come to one. But he is paying attention to what his constituents are saying. So I'll be happy to pass on what you've just told me.
Great. I believe that the nuclear deal will prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. So that seems important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, thank you for calling in, ma'am. I appreciate that.
Thank you. You have a nice day.
Okay. You too.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
I did. She was chipper.
I enjoyed it. I like her.
You know, I was going to say something, but I didn't until the end. There is a rumor that Chuck Schumer's office, there's been a lot of marriages between the staff members out of Chuck Schumer's office. He's got, you know, it's like, what do you call that in, where in Jewish?
Polygamy?
No, they're not all marrying each other. There's like a guy who puts people together, a Jewish guy in the Jewish, Charles, chime in. Now, come on. Now, all the listeners know, and you guys, that's what you get when you have young people on the show. They don't know. Moyle? No, that's the guy who cuts. No. Okay, anyway, listen. You're listening to the Giuliana Furlano Show. If you want to call Chuck Schumer now, 202-224-6542. And when you're done, you can call Kirsten Gillibrand at the same beginning numbers, 202-224. She's at 4451. It was fun to call. I enjoyed it. And now for our segment on...
Science!
Ah, yes, our segment on science.
Science!
We can never get enough of...
Science!
No, and this week we had so much to report. Joining us on the program is one of my favorite guests, a returning guest who I met at the Conference on World Affairs in Boulder, Colorado. Seth Shostak is currently the senior astronomer and director of the Center for SETI Research. SETI, of course, being the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I got to talk to Seth about Earth's cousin or Earth's twin that was found and what that means in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Here's our conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Let's just start with the most important thing that's going on. Happy birthday. Apparently you were born on the same day as the anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. So that's exciting.
It makes it easy for me to remember my birthday. I have to say that it had one downside when I was having a birthday in 1969 and having a party, actually. But the party was a bit of a flub because everybody was glued to the TV.
What a bummer. So let me just ask a question. Was that an instrumental time where you thought, wow, everyone cares about space and planets and space exploration? Maybe if I want some of this attention, I should get in on this. Did it have any effect on you?
Well, it did, because I just felt I'd gone to all this trouble to have this party and nobody's the least bit interested. No, I can't say that. I don't know whether it was instrumental or vocal. I really don't remember. But I do remember that I had been interested in space long before that. I got interested in space at the age of 8. And this particular birthday party, I'd already left middle age. So it was somewhat later.
Mm. How did you, by the way, get interested in space? And then how did your life unfold to make you the senior astronomer and director for the Center for SETI Research at the SETI Institute, and also the host of Big Picture Science, in case our listeners aren't familiar with you just yet, which they should be.
Well, I can trace it back at least, as I say, to the age of 8, and that's because I was interested in maps. I've always been interested in maps. I'm still interested in maps. I spend, maybe you do too, but I spend 10, 15 minutes every night going into Google Earth and going to look at some place I've either never been or would like to go or something like that. So I'm still interested in maps, but I was looking through an atlas that my parents had, a very, very old one. And in the back, there was some sort of strange diagram that had all these circles on it. And I asked my mom, what are those? You know, that doesn't look like a map. And she said, those are planets. I hadn't actually heard the word before. So I asked her about planets. And I traced my interest in astronomy back then. By age 10, I'd built a telescope and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it goes back a long way.
The big exciting news in the world of extraterrestrial research, not that you have found ET, but NASA and other scientists have discovered the closest twin to Earth using the Kepler Space Observatory. Can you talk a little bit about what it means to have Earth's cousin found?
Well, it is exciting, actually. This is all the result of the NASA Kepler Space Telescope, which you just mentioned. Now, Kepler, it's a telescope in space, and it's been up there 4 or 5 years, something like that. And all it does is stare at 170,000 stars, or that's what it was doing until parts of it broke. So it was staring for 4 years at 170,000 stars, just measuring how bright they are. It was just a light meter in space. Every 30 seconds, it would send information back down to Earth about how bright each of those 170,000 stars were. You might say, well, that's really pretty boring. That's the ultimate staring contest, really dull. Except that if you have that many stars, some of them will have planets that occasionally get in front of one of those stars and reduce the brightness by a very small amount, 0.01%. So one part in 10,000. That's very small. But this telescope can see that. And if it happens, they note that. And then if it happens again, say, 300 days later, they note that. And then if it happens a third time, 300 days after that, they say, you know what? You know what, Bob? We don't know why this star is getting a little dimmer every 300 days. But every, you know, doing it regularly means it's probably a planet passing in front of it. So Kepler 452b, that's the latest one. And it turns out the size of it is, you know, somewhat larger than the Earth, 60% larger. It has a year that's 385 days, not 365. Okay, so you'd have slightly fewer.
Forget it.
Days. Yeah, it would take you longer to get to 21, but, you know, it's the closest system we found to our own.
How far away is it?
It's far. It's 104, what is it? No, 1,400 light years, 1,400 light years. Now, you know, most people don't have, their car odometers are not marked in light years, but a light year is close to 6 trillion miles. So this is 1,400 times greater than that. Our fastest rockets would take about 35 million miles to get there. That's longer than you're going to want to sit in the middle seat eating peanuts.
So if they are looking at us right now, they are seeing what happened 1,400 years ago. What was happening back then? I'll have to look it up.
Well, I mean, you know,
Crusades and whatnot.
Yeah, well, the rise of Islam. I don't know that it was Crusades. They came a little bit later, but oh. Yeah.
Thank God, you have that all memorized.
Well, Christianity was getting away. The Roman Empire had collapsed 150 years earlier. Of course, they wouldn't be able to see any of that, and there weren't any.
What if they have great telescopes? What if they're?
They need a telescope about the size of our solar system, but that's okay. Maybe they have it.
See, now this is always very interesting because you've talked about the test for finding out if extraterrestrial life is somewhere out there is sending and receiving radio waves. Right. Is that right? That's how SETI, the SETI Institute, searches. Is that correct?
That's how we look for intelligent life.
Ah, now this, oh, okay. So you always say that they'd have to be pretty advanced to be able to receive and transmit radio waves, but doesn't that suggest, just that question is sort of reductive, isn't it? Doesn't it suggest that all forms of sentient life would have to have a similar advancement in terms of the creation and use of tools and technology that human beings have?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. The only kind of society we could find is one that's, you know, understood the laws of nature and has built some equipment, you know, radio transmitters, right?
And it'd have to be the same exact kind of equipment that we could...
No. It just like, I mean, you know, you could say maybe they have to invent the light bulb or the laser, something to make light, but it doesn't have to be the same technology. You could still see the light no matter what the technology is. So, but yes, I mean, in a sense, you could say maybe there are a lot of intelligent species out there that never do that. They just sit around and write poetry, in which case you're just not going to hear from those guys. It's really simple.
That's sad. So what you're saying is the people who have created the same kind of technology, some of which is horrendous, that we have created, are the only guys we're going to be able to find? That's a little scary. I like the poetry people. Let's find the poetry people.
You know, it's really hard to find the poetry, Return of the Poetry People. I saw that movie. That's really difficult because the only way you can find those guys, if they don't build anything huge, right? If they don't send out radio signals or flashing lights into space, the only way you're going to find them is either to go there or maybe wait for them to come here if you're into that. So, yeah, forget the poetry, people. Not going to hear from them. They're busy with their poetry.
Was this a very exciting discovery for the folks at SETI? Did you guys, I don't know, adjust your glasses enthusiastically or whatever scientists do when something exciting happens?
Well, I think I got a second cup of coffee. Julian, it was exciting. Of course it was exciting.
Sure.
And several of the people that work here at the SETI Institute were involved with that. They're involved with the Kepler, the whole Kepler program. So, of course, internally, it's exciting. But, you know, a year ago, in May of 2014, there was a planet announced. It had the name of Kepler-186f. Okay, maybe.
Oh, yeah. F. That was yesterday's news, F.
Exactly. Now it's yesterday's news. And you can talk to the guys who found Kepler-452b, which is today's news, and say, all right, guys. And many of them are guys, but not all. Fortunately, not all. And what do you think? A year from now, is Kepler-452b going to be yesterday's news? Because they'll be an even better candidate for a cousin of the Earth. And they said, well, of course. The significance is not so much Kepler-452b. You know, it's like the first sighting of a unicorn, for example, if you did that, right? The excitement would be that there must be lots of them out there. And so that's the significance here.
Just pivoting a little bit, why has Russian oligarch decided to give millions of dollars to SETI Institute at Berkeley instead of SETI Institute where you are? Does he not know that large percentage will go to college administrator afternoon vodka fund?
Well, that's an interesting thought. next time I see him, I will suggest that to him. Well,
you know him. So we're talking just for listeners who haven't heard, a consortium of scientists funded by a billionaire investor named Yuri Milner.
Yes.
He announced a $100 million project to answer some of the biggest questions in the universe, including, is there intelligent life beyond our solar system? Why did he make it rain in Northern California, not in Middle California?
Well, we're in Northern California. I just want you to know. But it's true. We're 50 miles south of Berkeley, I suppose.
Right. So I looked it up on my maps.
Okay, there you go.
Getting back to the maps.
It's a good thing you got those maps, that interest in maps. Well, Yuri Milner is a very clever guy, a very nice guy, actually. I've met him more than once. And he's just interested in this. He's been interested in it for a couple of years. He's also interested in physics. He has a big prize out there for people who do breakthrough work in physics. I think also mathematics. I'm not so sure. But in any case, he's interested in SETI. And he talked to the guys at Berkeley who are, I have to say, that's a very good group. They do some very interesting experiments. And they have, you know, the whole infrastructure of a university. That does help. And I think that they convinced him that with that kind of money spread over 10 years, they could do some really interesting stuff. It's true. None of that money comes here, much to the dismay of my colleagues. Mm. But, you know, the last act hasn't been written. I think Yuri is well aware that maybe he wants to put some money into our work, which uses not these rented telescopes, what the Berkeley guys plan to do, but we have our own array of telescopes, and that gives us certain advantages.
That's good, and it cuts down on rental money.
It cuts down on rental money, but it's also a different kind of instrument, and that's a kind of a techie subject, but it's able to do things that the others can't do. I mean, in science, it's never good to have it all being done by one group.
Sure.
You're talking about research. You know, if only one person is trying to find the answer to this question, that's usually less desirable than if you have a lot. Suppose only one group was looking for the cure for cancer. You want a lot of people doing it.
We're talking to Seth Shostak, senior astronomer and director of the Center for SETI Research at the SETI Institute and host of Big Picture Science. What's coming up this week on Big Picture Science?
Well, we're doing something about how you prove whether things are right or wrong, I believe.
duality. Yes.
Yes, 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 that kind of thing. We recently did a show on Pluto. That was a week before the New Horizons spacecraft got to Pluto. And we interviewed all the people who have something to say about Pluto. Obviously, Alan Stern, he was the head of is the head of the New Horizons mission, but also Neil deGrasse Tyson. Several people in New York probably have heard of Neil deGrasse Tyson.
No. We don't get out much.
and also one of our own scientists here, a guy by the name of Mark Showalter, his job, in fact, in terms of the Pluto mission, was to make sure that the spacecraft didn't hit any little rocks and self-destruct. And the fourth guy we talked to was a guy down at Caltech by the name of Mike Brown, who is responsible for Pluto not being a planet in some sense.
I'm old enough to remember when Pluto got booted. from well, being a planet.
Oh, that was 2006. That's
right, but short-term memory loss is a thing.
Now, it's even, what happened was this guy down at this Mike Brown guy, very good astronomer, and he found things that were Pluto-like, but farther away than Pluto. And one of these things he found was even bigger than Pluto. So the question is, well, are they going to become planets, or are you just going to demote Pluto? It was one of those deals.
I thought a planet had to be rotating around the sun.
They all go around the sun. Everything, you know, everything from here to a light year out goes around the sun. There are probably 100 billion comets. They all go around the sun. Going around the sun is not a very distinctive thing.
Ah.
If you're in this part of space, you probably go around the sun.
Okay.
So that wasn't it. They had to come up with a definition for a planet. That wasn't it.
So how did they, what's the cutoff? God, you know, I honestly didn't know that, and I have a master's degree, but it's not in science. Anywho, what is the cutoff for becoming a planet?
Being a certain distance doesn't do it for you. There's a whole bunch of asteroids between Mars and Jupiter. Sometimes they're called minor planets. And it's not because they dig for coal. They're just called minor planets because they're small, see? So one of the definitions of being a planet is that you should be round. You're big enough to be round. You know, small things look like, you know, peanuts and snack foods and stuff like that. But you know, what we call planets, they're all pretty much round. So that was the first definition. But the other thing is, there were technical things like it has to sweep out its orbit and all this sort of thing. Look, they were just, the public gets really exercised about whether Pluto is a planet or not. And I can't say that there are many astronomers who care one way or the other. I mean, Pluto's interesting. It's interesting. You could call it you could call it Bob. It'd still be interesting.
It is because of astrology. That must be it. Because Pluto used to, I don't know, mean something about your chart and your life and how you were going to grow up to be a organic gardener or whatever Pluto meant. I don't even know exactly. Do you think that's why people get so upset about it?
No, I don't think so. Because, astrology is a very old thing. That goes back thousands of years, right? And so, obviously, it didn't include Pluto because nobody knew about Pluto till 1930. So, you know. But I think that the reason they got upset is that as a kid, they were taught the nine planets.
Yeah.
So
that
some
too.
When you're taught that as a kid, anything you're taught as a kid becomes, you know this, literally sacred, right? It's very hard to convince people to adopt an attitude that's in contradiction to what they were told by their parents.
So I know you have a very tight schedule with all this interesting science things happening, so I do appreciate you coming on our show today. A final question about the funding of this kind of research. If it doesn't come from Russian oligarchs or beneficent benefactors, where do institutes like yours get funding? Is it through the government, or how does that work?
Well, for our SETI enterprises, where we're, you know, using these big antennas to try and eavesdrop on ET, that's all donations. There's no fund,
really?
Federal money. No, hasn't been for more than 20 years. So that's the
problem. Let's see, what happened? Who was in office cutting science budgets 20 years ago?
It wasn't in the executive branch. This was the legislative branch. Oh. There was a senator from Nevada, Democratic senator from Nevada, Richard Bryan, who killed NASA's SETI project. That was 1993. So it's been since then that there's been no federal money for that kind of work. The other kind of work done here at the SETI Institute includes, you know, looking for life on Mars, moons of Jupiter, Saturn, all that. And for that, there is some federal money, yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Any final thoughts for our audience?
Oh, final thoughts for the audience. No, listen, I'll tell you to keep watching the skies, but I'll bet you all a cup of coffee that within a year, you'll be hearing about a new cousin of Earth.
That was so great. We've been talking with Seth Shostak, American astronomer, and currently the senior astronomer and director at the Center for SETI Research out in California. You can follow Seth online at Seth Shostak. You can catch his podcast and radio show called Big Picture Science. It's very funny, very witty, very interesting. So happy to have had him on the show. Did you like the show today? I hope so. We put it together for you. I enjoyed doing it. For more information on the Giuliana Forlano Show, go to GiulianaForlano.com, where you will find live performances by Giuliana Forlano. Is it weird to talk to you in the third person about me? It might be. Anyway, I'm glad you listen. And I hope you enjoyed the longer format of our show that you can get on iTunes right now. And thanks again for supporting us using that Amazon link that you can get on our website. Follow me on Twitter at Giuliana Forlano. Special thanks to our engineer, Charles Carr. and all of our writers for the show, Jessica Go, Steve Rosenfield, and all the other ones who I'm forgetting right now. I love you all. Good night. Oh, wait, I remembered all their other names. Anthony Mostacho, Steve Heller, Ken Schultz, Bruce Cherry, Paul Lander, and our new guy, Howie. Thanks, everybody. Remember to tell your friends about our show. Find us at julianaforlano.com. See you next time. Bye.